Hi, my name is Martin Purnell and welcome to Off Grid Christianity, a weekly podcast, a programme for people who feel disconnected from church. On today's Off Grid Christianity is a gentleman who is a pastor, debater, author, blogger, owner of a great named website, The Wee Flea, and whilst his heart is in Scotland, he's currently residing in Australia. Why here, you ask? And why has Richard Dawkins not once but at least twice banned our guest from his website? No doubt we'll find out these answers and more as our special guest, as I said, is David Robertson. David, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Really looking forward to this. Wednesday today, it's actually nearly 11 o'clock at night, Northern Ireland time. What time is it in Australia today, sir?
It is about heading towards 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right. So you've had your breakfast, no doubt on the beach somewhere with a few shrimps on the barbie, and you're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, you've missed the fact that we've had continual rain for about 4 months, but never mind.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, forget the barbie bit then. What we do now is five simple questions. It's just to get a better understanding of who you are, what makes you tick, if that's all right. So question one, If you could invite anybody from history for an evening meal, alive or dead, so that you could ask them questions, who would it be?
Thomas Cromwell.
Really? Interesting.
I think I would invite Oliver Cromwell. I think that's who I'd go for. Oliver Cromwell.
Because?
Either of them. Well, because I find Thomas Cromwell fascinating and I find Oliver Cromwell even more fascinating. So, I'm just very intrigued by I think Oliver Cromwell is probably the greatest Englishman who's ever lived. And I'm a Scot, so me saying that's quite a good thing.
That's interesting. You said you're a Scot. Why do you say he's the greatest Englishman ever lived?
Because, our current king won't appreciate this, but he was a godly man. He overthrew the government. I think he gave the Jews freedom in England. He allowed that to happen. I think his foreign policy was amazing. I think he's possibly one of the, if not the greatest English leader there's been. Wow. So, and he was a military genius.
And he banned Christmas as well.
Well, that's not strictly accurate. He wasn't a dictator in that sense. But actually, banning Christmas is a really good idea. I'm all for banning Christmas. So go ahead, ban Christmas as much as you want.
Wait, we're only a minute in. Why would you want to ban Christmas then, David?
Oh, it's just commercial drivel. I preferred New Year. I mean, yeah. I love using, as a Christian, I love remembering the birth of Christ on Christmas. But I'll tell you this, it's really hard to do amongst all the tinsel and nonsense. So, I use Christmas for outreach, but I don't regard it as particularly Christian. I'd be more inclined to go along with Cromwell for that. I don't care about Christmas. Sorry about that. I'm glad this is not going out at Christmas.
Not yet, anyway. No, but I know what you mean. I prefer New Year's Eve, I must admit. Question two. Who is your favourite biblical character or favourite biblical story or favourite parable, David?
Favourite biblical character? Well, that's almost impossible to choose. Personally, Job. I like Job a lot. Favourite parable would be the parable of the sower. And what was the other one?
She's one of the three. But what is interesting, you've chosen my favourite parable of all time. So why is it yours?
Because it's what I do. I sow, and it's incredible for me to know that there are four different basic types, that there will always be fruit, and there are four different reactions. And I've always found that to be the case.
Yes. Question three, if you were prime minister for the day and could change any law or impose a new law, what would it be?
I'd ban abortion.
That seems to be a favourite topic from quite a few people. Why, good sir?
Well, because I do think it's the killing of human beings, and I think it's a sin that is just a stain on the nation. I think that people could come in with the exceptions. There are exceptions where, it might be the lesser of two evils, but in terms of abortion being used as a contraceptive or abortion being used because of economic reasons, I find that absolutely appalling. And I mean, there are other laws as well, but for that, for me, that one is, I just can't believe that we do it. And I believe that in, I could see in 100 years time, for example, people would be looking back at, on abortion as we now look back on slavery and say, how did they do that?
I hear that. I hear that. Thank you. Question four, outside of family events, what has been your most enjoyable day out?
Oh, I had lots of enjoyable days. I used to enjoy going to Dundee Football Club. Enjoyable is perhaps not the word. You know, that's self-inflicted misery. probably.
Can I stop you there? You don't support my team. And that's why I had to rush back 25 miles because I was watching at a friend's house. My team's Bristol City. So listen, I know what you're talking about. Dundee, is that... Yeah. No. I always get confused between Dundee and Dundee United. Which strip do you wear at home?
I was the dark blue. I was Dundee, the real Dundee team. But I think my most... one of my most enjoyable... There's lots of enjoyable days out, but apart from family events and things. So I would say... going to the Sydney Cricket Ground to watch Australia play India. That was a great day out.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Outside of... sorry, I've done that. What's your most embarrassing moment, good sir, to date?
Oh, there have been many embarrassing moments. There's one, I was leading a camp for kids from poorer housing estates in Dundee, and there was a woman who came up. People came on that camp from different churches. There was a woman who came from a Pentecostal church, and she told me afterwards that she was really scared of me. I was a Presbyterian minister, and she had this idea that I would be kind of dour and miserable. I don't know what it was. Anyway, she told me afterwards that there came a point where she knew it was going to be okay. And I said, "When was that?" And she said, "When we all went swimming at a local river." And the kids were jumping in off the rocks, and I jumped in off the rocks as well. But it was so high that when I jumped in, my swimming shorts came off, and I waited until I thought everyone had their back turned, and I jumped out. And, you know, I hope in a nanosecond managed to get a towel around me and everything else. But in that nanosecond, she saw me, and she thought, "That's fine. I don't need to be afraid of him anymore." So it was very embarrassing.
Yes, but there's a plus point to that story.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, you've mentioned your Presbyterian minister. Why are you down in Australia if your heart is always in Dundee with the blue shirts?
Well, my, you know, I think as a Christian, you don't have a continuing city or even country, and you have to be prepared to go wherever God sends you. I mean, personally, I would have, I always had a desire to go to China, and I've only ever been once. I was a minister in Scotland for 33 years, and I was involved doing certain types of evangelism, and I got to a stage where I needed to do that full time. And basically, I came to Australia because they were the only place that asked me. It's as simple as that. There were push and pull factors, but if you want the simple answer is, I believe it's what God called me to do.
Can't argue with that. Can't argue with that at all. I'm unsure people could actually, but I take that entirely.
Yeah.
I mentioned also that about your website, the We Flee. How did that come about, sir?
Yeah, I was in Dundee, Scotland. I was in a church, Robert Murray McShane's church, St. Peter's. It was pretty dead. I mean, there were seven people when we went there.
Wow.
And so we had to reach out in this massive building. Christians weren't going to come. So I had to reach out to known Christians, and I did all different kinds of things. And one of the things I did was engage with different people. Richard Dawkins wrote a book called The God Delusion. I wrote a response called The Dawkins Letters, which rather bizarrely became a bestseller. Really bizarrely. And you're asking about the website, was it? Or
Yeah, how the website came about. That's fine. Yeah,
how it came about. So I didn't have a kind of website or anything like that. I got involved on Dawkins' website. He banned me a couple of times. I ended up, he called myself and Alistair McGrath and John Lennox fleas living off a dog's back, quoting the poet W.H. Auden. And we, what did we do? I just called myself the Wee Flea because my church was known, the Free Church of Scotland. Our nickname was the Wee Freas. I figured that Dawkins wouldn't really know Scottish Presbyterian history. So I just called myself the Wee Flea. I came back, survived for a few months, then got banned again. And I just thought, you know this, I'm just going to write my own stuff. So I had written for the Free Church website, and then I just thought, I guess the way that I express myself best is writing. So I just started writing articles online, called it the Wee Flea, and it just grew and grew and grew. I mean, it gets about 1 million visits every year, and people from all over the world. And it's funny, I came here, I was down at a conference in Victoria, I think it was, and this man sat beside me and said, "You're from Scotland?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh," he says, "I read this guy from Scotland called the Wee Flea." And I says, "Well, before you go any further," I said, "I am the Wee Flea." it's kind of stuck. We've just started with my work. We've just started another website called Ask, which is ask.org.au. But I'm keeping the Wee Flea going. The Wee Flea, when we in Scotland, we set up something called Solas. And again, I kept the Wee Flea going because basically it's only me that can be sued. You know?
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
I just say what I want to say on it. When you're writing for an organization, you've got certain limitations, I think. And even writing for a church, you've got certain limitations. Whereas the Wee Flea is just, it's now a compendium. I write for example, Evangelicals Now or for Christian Today. I write for the Australian Presbyterian. I've written for secular things as well. And I put all of that on the Wee Flea. And then I put some more personal stuff on there as well.
Yeah. Well, having gone through the Wee Flea, I'm amazed how kind you are in responding to, I suppose, for a better word, trolls or people that got a real bee in their bonnet. Something I could never do, and I would just sort of hide away if someone went boo to me. But you've got this great knack of just carrying the conversation on till they either give up or most probably say, "Okay, you're right," which probably is very rare indeed. So how do you cope with trolls and other people who, for a better word, snowflakes or whatever, want to have a go at you?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I've come off the back of something yesterday where by the end of the night, I was almost in despair last night because of the level of abuse that I was getting. So to give you an example, and I received unbelievable abuse from the Dawkins website. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff. It was talk about hate speech. But we have a thing here called Australian Rules Football. It's a big, big thing. There's a major club here where a guy was just appointed chairman, you know, salary of $500,000 a year, extraordinary. He's a Christian. And they trawled through his church's sermons from 10 years ago and found something that was said that wasn't 100% positive about homosexuality. So eventually, I mean, the premier joined in, and eventually they fired him, in effect. He was forced to resign. And I wrote a response to that. And there was a journalist here who went berserk about stuff. He's really angry. And he, you know, said, "Can anyone tell me anywhere where Jesus said anything about homosexuality or abortion?" So I he's got about 250,000 followers or something. So I tweeted him saying, "If you're serious, I'll do it." And he said, "Go for it." So I did. So I wrote an article which explains what Jesus says about both those subjects. And if any of your guys are interested, you can get it on the Ask website. Well, anyway, it kind of took off and so on. But this guy, rather than listen, he blocked me, got his followers to start abusing me, and it just kept going.
Yeah.
Now, but what was interesting to me was I said he was a coward, you know, which he is. And it's funny, you instantly get Christians who come on and start saying things like, "Oh, you shouldn't be rude," and you know, Jesus was this and Jesus was that. And honestly, I'm afraid these Christians do my head in, because whilst I think we have to show respect, we have to not bear personal grudges, mm-hmm. we have to be kind to people, I cannot believe they're reading the same Bible. I mean, I look at Elijah and the prophets of Baal. You know, where's your God? Is he sitting on the toilet? Has he gone on a holiday? Has he packed his suitcase? You know, or Jesus saying to the Pharisees, you whitewash tombs, you're twice dead. People walk over you. Or Paul saying to the Galatians, you know, you circumcisers, I wish you'd go the whole way and castrate yourselves. You know, I look at all of that and I think, hang on a minute. Now, I don't, that's not excusing rudeness.
Yes.
But what my view personally is that I continue to discuss with people. I mean, yesterday's a great example. I removed several posts from my Facebook page because people were just swearing and being abusive, and there's no point with that. Sometimes there are people who are angry because they've had some experience of religious abuse or mm-hmm. something, and you deal with that. But no, I think I don't know. Sometimes, I mean, I used to have this cartoon that I'd stuck on my wall, which had a guy sitting at a laptop shouting up to his wife, "Oh, I can't come to bed yet, dear. There's someone wrong on the internet." You know, and, you know, you have to resist the temptation to try and correct everyone. The trouble with doing stuff on the internet is you don't get tone, you don't get body language, yeah. and things escalate very quickly. I have to say that if there's a bigger cesspit than Twitter, I've not yet come across it. It seems to be the worst of all. But it's horrible. I mean, it's absolutely horrible. I hate it.
Mm.
But having said that, through the blog, through social media and so on, there've just been thousands and tens of thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people you're able to reach. Once you get past a certain level, I mean, Christians shouldn't kid themselves. The people who think that their online Bible study is going to be used in 100 years' time, forget it. It's not going to be looked at by anyone after 2 weeks, you know, and it was probably just you, your mom, and, you know, 10 of your congregation who saw it. And that's fine, but we shouldn't pretend. But with some things, you get a certain level, you know, there's some articles, most articles I write, maybe 2,000 to 3,000 people read them. But some of them, it's 100,000, you know, there's a few that go up very high. Yeah, but it is just a few. I mean, I write a lot. And, you know, in a year's time, I'd look back and think, that one's not worth keeping. That one's not worth keeping. Maybe at the end of my life, there might be 10 articles, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They were worthwhile. But sorry, that's a long answer to tie into all that. You have to be really, really, really careful. I've got things wrong so many times. And I'd say this in terms of Christians who criticize what I do. I would say, yeah, your criticism is almost certainly correct, at least in part. But I feel a little bit like D.L. Moody when somebody criticized the way he evangelized. He said, well, you may well be right, but I prefer the way I evangelize to the way you don't. And I just find myself, I'm in the public arena quite a lot. I've tried to withdraw from it sometimes. In fact, I said to my wife last night, I don't know why I did this thing over the weekend. And she just said, well, because you were being faithful. You know, it's so funny. What I find particularly difficult is in the church, we shoot our own wounded, you know.
Mm.
We really... you know, the other one I find really quite funny, you're asking how you deal with this. The one I find yeah. that just stuns me is people, Christians, who write in, and in fact, they don't write you personally. They complain in public and they judge you in public for daring to judge anyone about anything. You know, so yeah. if I said, for example, that like the current journalist I had a wee spat with, I said he was an angry man who was a coward. Well, he is an angry man who is a coward. His abusive language towards me for a public figure is really quite shocking.
Hmm.
And there were Christians who they write in and they say, oh, you shouldn't say anything like that in public, not realizing that they're doing the very thing they're criticizing me for, which is, I don't understand how people don't see that, so I think there's a whole range of issues. I'll give you one more story.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you.
There was there's a society called the Scottish Secular Society. Now, I shouldn't have done this. I confess this. I went on their website because they had a go at me about something, and on their Facebook page, and I started answering their messages. Well, it was like, how will I put it? It was like pouring petrol on a fire. Mm. I mean, the for 2 years I stuck at it. I just kept going. They kept abusing, they kept abusing, and kept abusing. Anyway. After I came off, about a year later, one of them, who was very high up in their organization, contacted me to say that he wanted to apologize for all the things he'd said about me. He wanted to say that he still wasn't a Christian, but he'd left them. He said they were so abusive, it was so bad. And he said, and I was part of it. It was really, really wrong. Yeah. And he said, I never forget that privately, he had a particular personal circumstance which was very difficult and was very public, and I wrote him privately and said, I know you won't appreciate this, but I am praying for you. And he said, I never forgot that you did that. And since then we became friends. And yeah. I thought, when you're doing this kind of stuff, remember, it's a cesspit. The temptation for lots of Christians is just to be bland and, oh, let's be nice to everybody, and people know that's not real. Or the temptation is to be kind of, angry, shock jock, take it all personally. Mm-hmm. My view is you present your case, you be robust, you're true to yourself. I hope you're true to the Word and to Christ. And the primary thing for me is not so much the person you're having the discussion with, it's the people who are watching. And I've been amazed how many people I've come across who have been influenced by discussions that we've had. I freely admit I've got it wrong many, many times. And
we lost the sense of debating?
Oh yeah. Well, we've it's not just the sense of debate. We don't know how to argue. Yeah. So, I grew up in an environment and in a home where we would argue all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You're in Northern Ireland just now. You guys, they knew how to argue. I mean, okay, they took it a bit far sometimes, I mean, we drew the line at bombs, but we knew how to argue. And we would argue. But what I've realized is people just take it all so incredibly personally.
Yes.
I'm arguing about ideas. I'm arguing about what does this mean? And in our society, we've moved towards a stage where if you dare to disagree with anyone's opinion or not affirm them in everything that they say, then somehow you're hateful.
Yeah.
And so what happens is people just end up in silos. They end up only talking to people that they agree with.
Yeah.
If I only talked to people who agreed with me on everything, I'd just be looking in a mirror, and even then I'd be arguing with myself.
But going further on this then, there's a classic cartoon that I sent to a few people, courtesy of social media, albeit WhatsApp, mm-hmm. and it was of a little girl looking up her dad outside, and the dad said, obviously had the ball in his hand, and says, what's the magic word if you want it back? And the little girl says, I'm offended.
Yeah.
And I think that isn't that the situation we're in now with regard to social media, that people are immediately offended and you take their side rather than discuss it?
But it's not even just offended. There's a power dynamic in here as well. So there's a wee clip that I watched of a policeman approaching, I think it was a feminist demonstrator, and saying, you can't say that because it will offend somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember once the BBC, BBC Radio Scotland, asked me to do a thought for the day. So I said, that's fine. I'll just turn up at the studio in Dundee and just, speak for 90 seconds. And they said, no, you have to put in a script. So I thought, okay, I'll put a script in. if that's what you want. So I wrote the script. And in the course of the script, I used the phrase Britain's Christian values. And the producer, who actually happened to be from Northern Ireland, said to me, you can't use that. I said, pardon? He said, you can't use that. It might offend somebody. I said, okay, well, two things. First of all, it's true that, you know, Britain was founded on Christian values, whether you like them or not. And secondly, are you really expecting me to speak to 250,000 people without offending anyone? I said, I can't even talk to my own family for 5 minutes without offending one of them. You know, are you seriously? And he said, yes. And I said, well, it's no wonder you're so bland. And I said, I said, look, you can't do that. I said, because it doesn't happen. You don't mean you're not allowed to offend anyone.
Yeah.
You mean you're not allowed to offend certain groups of people. I said, I find a lot of stuff I hear on the BBC offensive. I said, I don't think you should all be silent. So I said, you don't care what offends me. You care. I said, and that's the power dynamic. And that's what happens. So it's not just on social media. It's everywhere. And in churches as well, you get people stand up and say things in church in public. And I think sometimes, you know, couldn't we be a bit more honest?
Yes.
I think in today's terms, Jesus, Moses, Elijah, Paul would all be considered incredibly offensive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now we shouldn't set out to be offensive. There are people who are just offensive. And at times I think I've probably been that. You know, you say something that's ignorant or offensive. Yeah. But the notion that we're just going to say stuff that people like, how can you speak truth? What if truth is offensive? You know, what are we supposed to do?
Exactly. If I was, let's just say, the chap that you were having the conversation with words yesterday, he's got 250,000 followers. If that had happened, that conversation in a pub or, you know, in a coffee bar or whatever, would it have got out of control? Had you been face to face with him?
So what I do, in Northern Ireland, in Scotland, in England, I would go and speak in a pub or, a church would ask me, I'd tell them I'd hire a restaurant. We'd go and do stuff. People would turn up. A lot of non-Christians would turn up. Yeah. Atheists would turn up because, you know, and, you know, invariably I would get the reaction, oh, you're not as evil as we thought you were. Because the trouble is when you're looking at on social media or something, first of all, it's instant. Secondly, it's repeated. Thirdly, there's no evidence at all of tone. You know, so, I mean, I realize that people hear what they want to hear. You know, so take this thing yesterday. I wrote this, an article about Jesus. Now, there was a Christian, and I think it must be for political reasons. I don't know why. He just wrote in public attacking me, saying that, in an article that's supposed to be about Jesus, you never mentioned Jesus. Now, in that article, I went through it. I mentioned the name of Jesus 27 times. I used verbs and pronouns for Jesus another 40 times. I quoted Jesus directly 7 times. And yet a man felt perfectly capable of writing, you never mentioned Jesus.
Mm.
Not only that, what got me was people liked it and reposted it. I'm going, are you people crazy? But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's true. It matters what people feel. Now, I feel that in a pub setting or, you know, yes, there are some things that get out of hand. Of course there are, particularly if drinks involved. But in reality, you sit down and talk to people. So people would phone me up. I remember a trans activist when I was in Dundee. She phoned me up. She was a lecturer in a university and, you know, well, she didn't phone me up. She wrote me, said, I'm mad at you. I hate you. Da, da, da. And I contacted her and said, I'm sorry, I don't do this by email. Let's go meet up somewhere. And we did. We went and had a coffee for 2 hours in one place. And at the end, she said to me, David, this is really weird. I agree with 95% of what you're saying. And I'm going back to my friends and saying that you're not as bad as they think you are. Now, had my views changed? No, they hadn't.
No.
Did I express them better? Almost certainly yes, because I'm talking face to face. But you can go into depth. It's like you and I, you know, we're talking on here and it's great. I mean, it's great that we can see each other and so on. But I'm working with an internet company just now looking at how okay, we can get smell, but looking at how we can do body language better, how we can interact better. You know what it's like on a Zoom call? Once you get beyond five or six people, it's very difficult to have any kind of meaningful conversation. Whereas in a room, you're in a Bible study room with 12 people sitting around or whatever, you can see from the body language, you can see from everything how people are reacting and so on. And so I feel that there's a lot of that. And here's another thing for me, from a biblical point of view, a theological point of view, Jesus became incarnate. He became human flesh. He dwelt amongst us. This wasn't disembodied teaching sent from on high. And I feel that the embodiment of our Christianity, in other words, our communication is our whole personality. It's our body. It's our tone. It's the context, the culture, and applying the word of God in that. So I think that we need to learn to do that. I keep trying. And it's funny, this journalist, he blocked me. Why did he block me? Was it because I was rude to him? No. It was because he didn't want to have people have to interact with something that was different. And people like, I'll tell you what, like Richard Dawkins, he liked interacting with Christians who were a bit ignorant and who were rude. He loved all that. You know, that was just fuel for him. Where he struggled was with people who could interact with him. And he just didn't like that, you know. Sorry, and I'll give you one more example. I remember I did a debate down in London, and a man came up to me afterwards and said, "David, I'm going to tell you something, and it's not a compliment." And I said, "Well, okay, too late. I already know it's going to be a compliment." You know? And he said, "Look, I'm an LGBT activist." And he said, "If you were still my vicar at school, if you were my vicar at school, I'd probably still be a Christian." And I said to him, you want me to take that not as a compliment? He says, no. He said, "I hate Christianity. I don't want to be a Christian. I hate Christians." And he said, "The trouble with you is you made it sound reasonable. You made it sound good." And he said, "I hate that. You are so dangerous." And I think that there are times when I don't do that. There are times, as I say, when I get it wrong. But I think that people are scared. They're scared of truth. They're scared of being challenged. I have to say, for me as a Christian, I don't care. I will go and listen to anybody I've spoken. You know, I'll go and speak in a gay bar. I'll go anywhere. I don't have a problem with any of that. But there are people who I know that if I go and speak there, I remember one man saying, "You'll never ever be allowed here." I said, "Why?" "Because it was offensive." He said, no. He said, "People liked it too much." Mm-hmm. And I think, well, fair enough. That's the way it is.
Well, what about then taking the social platforms that everyone uses these days? Are we getting to a stage whereby it's going to start to implode and people are going to say, "I've had enough," and we're just going to go back to maybe just WhatsApp groups and buying newspapers again and writing letters? What do you think?
No, I think I heard the American psychologist Jonathan Haidt saying that I heard him give a lecture, and he said that if there's one thing he would wish he could uninvent, it would be the like button on Facebook. He was arguing that social media is doing so much mental harm to our young people, and I agree with that. I think the demon's in too deep. I think there are a growing number of Christians, amongst others, who are basically, they don't want to withdraw from the world, but they're basically saying, I'm getting out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm off Twitter. I mean, most people are not on Twitter. It's the politicians and the journalists. But they're saying, you know, I'm getting off Twitter. They're saying, Facebook. I mean, there are things that I've just made private. The trouble with the internet is, in our society, there's no forgiveness, and it's forever.
Yes.
You know, so I made a remark 25 years ago, and there are people who go through and troll with algorithms to try and get stuff that you have said that they then bring back to try and cancel you. You know, it's funny because I used to go into the BBC I remember one presenter saying to me, it was a live show and there was a piece of music, and during the piece of music she said, "How do you do it?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, we're getting all this hate stuff in pouring for you. It's just, you haven't said or done anything. I said, I know. I said, that's just the way it is. I said, date. And she, you know, she said it was just really, really sad that people do that. But they said they were, she said, they're demanding that we cancel you, that we not allow you to speak. And I said, I presume, you know, they would say things like homophobia, or now it's transphobia, mm-hmm. of course. And I said, okay. I said, I'll tell you what, you put this challenge to them. Tell them if they can come up with one single homophobic thing I've ever said, I'll walk out the studio. And no one's ever been able to do that, because being against same-sex marriage isn't homophobic. I mean, Peter Tatchell used to be against same-sex marriage. Yeah, you know, there's so many things. In the mercy and providence of God, I don't think I've ever said or written anything which could be classed like that. Now, I regard that as entirely as in the mercy of God, because I probably would have. You know, I probably would have made a stupid joke or done something. But it just hasn't happened. So I think churches, you need to use social media, but be very careful about it. I think we need to learn to limit it. I think for some people, get off it. You know, just get off it. I think we need to think about our use of time, our use of language, how we communicate, and whether we're actually talking with real people at any point. You know, there's a whole discussion there about cyber church and everything as well. But if I had to call myself anything, it would be a meta evangelist, as a cyber evangelist, because most of my evangelism is done online. But it's a bit like cyber dating. So I used to think cyber dating, oh, what a ridiculous idea. We'd never do that, until I discovered that a lot of the weddings I were doing were with Christians who'd met online.
Yeah.
And I realized cyber dating wasn't a bad thing. Cyber dating's okay. Cyber marriage, You know, no, you know, cyber sex, don't be ridiculous. You know, cyber dating is a means of contacting and connecting people. But if you're going to cyber date, what happens is you end up then arranging to meet for coffee. You end up getting to know each other and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would argue that that's very much the same with evangelism. What I do in evangelism, I fish. I cast out bait into the wide ocean of the internet. Some people take the bait. I'm able to connect them with other churches if they're nowhere near me. I'm able to meet. I mean, I meet with people every single week. I mean, in fact, as soon as we're done here, I'm going off to meet a guy who've contacted me through the internet. So I fish with that. But fishing is not the meal. It's not the feast. You know, it's the invitation. So you can use the internet for the invitation. You can use the internet to keep in touch. But it doesn't beat real face-to-face communication.
Yeah, no, exactly. I used to be a sales training officer before going into radio. And you know, a number of times we would say that most of the signs you get from people are non-verbal. And that's what we're losing, I believe, in social media today. You've already made mention, you know, if we didn't have the camera on us, which nobody else will see, mm-hmm. of course, I wouldn't know what your actions are going to be, whether you're smiling or whatever. And it seems that people just mm-hmm. taking this word that comes up in social media on a platform as gospel. And I've seen so many differences that can be read into one simple sentence. So where do we go from here, do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think, see, this is where I think the church has an enormous advantage, because people want community, and the church is and should be a community. So I would take Hebrews 10, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. I think that's really important. Yeah. I think we need to have real communities. I think we use the internet and so on as tools, as we would use paper as a tool or a pen as a tool. But I think we, you know, it's back to the spiritual disciplines of working out how we do time. I think basic things like hospitality, sitting around a table, having food together, and all that is pretty important. I think, you know, coming back to the language thing and the sign thing, you know, I was at a meeting once where a well-known evangelist was speaking and asking questions. This woman stood up and she asked a question about suffering. And what he did was awful, because he basically attacked her and dealt with her as though she was a philosophy student trying to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone who saw her, and he must have seen her, he must have, I mean, we saw her. It is clear that she was asking a question out of a broken heart. And the minute you're aware of that, that changes your answer. It's like when someone asks you about homosexuality.
Yeah.
What do you think about homosexuality? They could be asking, why are you such a homophobic bigot? Or they could be asking, my 14-year-old kid brother committed suicide because he was bullied for being gay at school.
Mm.
Those are two different questions. But they're the same question in verbally. But you can tell by body language, or sometimes you have to ask another question and so on. So I think we're back to communication. We're back to what Jesus did. We're back to the word being important, especially the word of God. I'm more and more struck by this that, you know, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words won't pass away. God's words will always be here. You know, computers will come and go. The internet will come and go. Different means of communication will come and go. Books will come and go. I've probably written about 25,000 articles. I doubt any of them will be around in 100 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, you know, stupid like that. But God's word will always be here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't that amazing? You know, with the Queen's funeral,
mm-hmm.
What struck me about it was so good, partly, I think, because she arranged it, but partly because it was the Book of Common Prayer. And let's assume that it was 2-3 billion people. Can you imagine Archbishop Cranmer in the 16th century ever imagining that his words in the Book of Common Prayer would be broadcast throughout the whole world? He would have no concept of that.
No.
You know, and basically, he was just picking it up from the Bible. So, I mean, I would look at all of this and just say, you know, it's back to being basically Christian. It's back to loving the Lord, loving his people, loving the lost, living lives for Jesus, realizing we are now living in Babylon. You know, we're living in a bent and twisted and crooked world, and in the Western world, a world that's largely rejected Christianity and is beginning to reap the consequences. And rather than be fearful, we should be holding out the light of the gospel in the midst of what is a very pagan society.
Well, for those that are listening today, David, and are suffering as a result of either being trolled, i.e. people hurling abuse at them, or they received a really nasty text from somebody, what would you say to them?
Well, I would try to avoid saying, suck it up, because that's what Jesus did. I get fed up with Christians saying that. You know,
build a bridge.
Or Christians have to be, Christians have to be silent and suffer. Or the other one is, we could all do with a little bit of persecution, because, you know, if you've ever been persecuted, you don't want it. I mean, I was seriously ill in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
In one sense, it did me a huge pair of good. Do I ever want to do it again? Do I want anyone else to go through that? Absolutely not. I think if you want suffering, there's something wrong with you. So when you are being attacked, what I would suggest is this. If you want to know how serious it is, read the Book of Psalms, and also maybe Proverbs. Because David continually goes on about how his enemies are attacking him with words. And this is serious stuff. But I would also say this. A lot of time, it isn't about you, actually. It's about Christ. They hate Christ. If they've hated me, they'll hate you. Sometimes it will be about you. Sometimes you'll have got things wrong. Sometimes there'll be unpleasant aspects of your personality. Well, that's fine. I used to have a T-shirt that said, please be patient with me. God hasn't finished with me yet.
Yeah.
You know, you look to Christ. You really do. You look to Christ for your sanctification and your justification and everything. I think you need to be with like-minded Christians. Now, that means brothers and sisters who will challenge you and who will not agree with you on everything, but people who've got your back. You need a band of brothers. I'm fed up being stabbed by Christians, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need wisdom. You need, you need strength. I read the Puritans. I read the early church fathers. I use McShane's calendar for reading the Bible. I think it's important to belong to a good church. There's all these different kinds of things that I think are important. But recognize you're in a battle. You'll get to a point in your life where you're going to be saying, oh, Lord, come soon, you know, because you know it. But he will, and he'll sustain you, and he'll lead you beside the still waters as well as through the valley of the shadow of death.
Yeah. Well, in the remaining 5 minutes, because that's all we've got, unfortunately, for your appointment, and we could listen to you, and I've got so many questions I could ask you. Very quickly, you mentioned right at the top end, in fact, Robert Murray McShane. And yeah. I looked very quickly on Wikipedia. There's a social media platform. But tell us more as to why it's so important to you and Dundee, please.
Well, I went to his church. So I ended up writing a book called Awakening. In fact, it was the first book I ever wrote, which is a kind of contemporary history of Robert Murray McShane. It's quite funny. The publishers didn't know how to label it, so they called it autobiography. And I said, no, I don't believe in reincarnation.
This is
actually a history of McShane. But there's a lot of lessons for us to learn. McShane died very young, 29. He was minister for 7 years in St. Peter's, and just saw revival and renewal. And it's just wonderful. There's a wonderful old book with a great title, The Memoir and Remains of Robert Murray McShane by Andrew Boner. And it's still in print. I think it's Banner of Truth and others as well. Mm-hmm. And I would say to any of your listeners, get a copy of it. It's wonderful. And you could combine that with my Awakening, which was a more contemporary one. But no, I think he's pretty important.
Yeah. Well, we'll do your hero slot in a minute just to finish it off. But it's been fascinating hearing from you. For those that would like to get in touch with you or to at least read your website, what addresses can you give us, good sir, please?
Okay, I'll give you some things. So, I actually do produce quite a lot. The thing that I've actually become most well known for now is a podcast called Quantum of the Wee Flea, which is basically half an hour. I'm going to record it in a couple hours. It's half an hour of comment on news and culture from throughout the world. I've got a guy who's a BBC producer who actually produces it for me, so it's very top quality.
Yeah.
And I use a lot of music and stuff. And it's interesting because as our news media have become less reliable overall, I know a lot of Christians who started taking it as, in fact, younger Christians especially, as a main news source for them. So you get this on the website as well. It's on, it's on Apple, it's on Podbean and various things like that, and Spotify. So the website is theweeflea.com. That's it's all one word. We is W-E-E, little, the weeflea, F-L-E-A.com. And I've also just got a website up now called ask.org.au. And that's a more interactive one where people write in questions and we seek to respond to them. And that's very much geared towards non-Christians as well. Although the Christians can become members of it and there's more private stuff I would put out. If people are interested in any of that, the website is basically where everything comes. And as I say, all right. Now, I put in one caveat with this. I think out loud. And what that means is I often get things wrong. Or I remember one guy came up to me and he shook my hand. He said, "Hi, David." He said, I read the Wee Flea. And I said, I know. Let me finish the sentence for you. And he laughed and said, "What?" I said, "But I don't agree with everything you write." And I said, "Look, I'm going to get a T-shirt. I'm going to put on the front, I write the Wee Flea, and I don't agree with everything I write." because I'm just trying to work things out. I don't know everything. I'm trying to agonize what is going on in this world and how do we cope with it? And I keep coming. Everything keeps coming back to me, to Christ and His Word, and how does it relate to that? So that's what I try to do. I don't necessarily always succeed, but anyone who's watching this or listening to this, you're very welcome to come on board.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, this has been a BCSC production. It's been a real privilege to hear what you've been sharing and how you go through it. I couldn't do it. It is worth looking at your Weefly website because you do spend time trying to explain nicely to the people that want to basically come on and argue with you. Maybe some of them, though, are actually arguing, but as you've already alluded, they're really hurting inside and they just need to vent their angst. So I'm hoping that in the future, we'll see people calming down in all sides and that communication can work properly. Robert McShane, but you're not Robert McShane, you're David Robertson. David Robertson, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm going to leave you now, please, for 2 minutes to talk about your Christian hero, who hopefully is dead. We have to have him as dead or her dead, because then we can't say, years to come, look what that person did, and preferably not in the Bible. So please just tell us who your Christian hero is and why, please.
Oh, I have so many in different ways, but I'm going to go with McShane I ended up studying him, reading his letters, original papers, and so on. How God used him, a middle-class Edinburgh lawyer with a weakly disposition. You know, he's a very weak guy in some ways. Marvelously converted, largely through the death of his brother. Very short ministry, and yet saw renewal and revival. There was a servant girl who was writing about him after he died, or testified about him after he died. In Scots, it was his idea to see people converted. He was always dying to see people converted. To be honest, he wasn't the greatest preacher in the world, but he was a godly man. He once said, "My people's greatest need is my own holiness," and I thought that was a ridiculous statement until I became a minister, and I realized how true it was. His love for the Jewish people, you know, he traveled to Israel, he set up Christian Witness to Israel, and there are some, in fact, my PhD supervisor wanted me to do a PhD on the influence of Robert Murray McShane on the Balfour Declaration and the establishment of the State of Israel. So his love for the Jewish people, his zeal for outreach and evangelism, what happened with that, his compassion for the young, some of his letters and diary entries about visiting sick children was just utterly astonishing. His utter bluntness with his own people, even his own elders, wondering if some of them were converted, you know, and so on. So he's my hero in many ways, and not least the fact that he suffered a couple of bouts of depression, maybe because he was such an intense mm-hmm. personality. And the fact that he was so human, he once said about St. Peter's, its latter days will be greater than its former. And I actually believed that. And we saw a church grow from a handful to about 250 or so, which was wonderful. Wow. And I mean, I've been gone 3 years now, but it's still developing and growing. And I'm very thankful for that. McShane is one of my heroes. I have one or two artifacts from him.
Oh, wow.
I probably know as much about him as, well, there's a couple of other individuals in the world who may know as much, but he's always been an inspiration to me.
Great. What artifacts have you got, David?
I had a walking stick that he was given after he got beaten up in Poland on his way back from Israel, and the people were so he was almost killed, and the people were so upset that this happened to him that they gave him a walking stick. And then I had he was an artist as well, and I had a drawing of that he drew of himself, a self portrait. You know, so he drew quite a few self portraits. It's quite funny because he wrote poetry. Some of it was dreadful. Some of it was great. I mean, there's a hymn. I once was a stranger to grace and to God. It's a hymn called Jehovah Sikenu, which is a fabulous hymn. But he wrote this dreadful poem about why being a Christian was like a game of billiards. You know, it's really quite funny.
There's a pun there. Was it? There is a pun. You mentioned the canon, couldn't you? There, but.
Yeah, it was well, not for Presbyterians, but unintentionally. Yeah. So there was stuff in there, but I can't remember. Was it F.B. Meyer or somebody saying something like, no, it was McShane himself. Actually, it's amazing what God can do with a sinner. In the hands, it's amazing what a holy God can do with a sinner in his hands, mm-hmm. you know. And I long for that. I remember one time I baptized a Jewish girl in McShane's church, and there was someone present there from Nazareth and someone present there from Babylon.
Wow.
And I just thought, McShane, oh, Nineveh it was, yeah. Nineveh, not Babylon. They were there from Nineveh. Well, Nineveh is Babylon. But so, and I just thought, 150 years ago, McShane could never have imagined that this would happen in his own church.
Yeah.
You know, so
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, we'll leave it at that. David, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fantastic listening to what you've had to say. Really, really pleased that you were able to join us. Thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.